Any views, thoughts, or opinions expressed on the Rejuvenating Health podcast are solely that of the speakers and are intended as such. Please contact your trusted medical practitioner for medical advice. Let's go, girls. Hey, girls, welcome back to the Rejuvenating Health podcast. I'm Shauna Schaefer, and today I'm joined by Lindsay Van Schoik, our women's health nurse practitioner and owner of Rejuvenating Health. And also we have Megan Pomerinsky here with us today, and she is an athletic therapist, and she's going to shed a ton of helpful insight for you ladies on today's show. So let's kick it off. Thanks for joining us, Megan.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So last episode, this was a great segue for this topic because we talked about how to get started exercising and how to kind of maybe start to overcome those obstacles of I can't do that anymore, or I can't work out because I have these injuries. And I know that you really specialize in helping people get over that. So why don't you kind of just shed some information on who you are and what you do, and then really how you fit in this population of women that we love to help.
Absolutely. So my practice is mainly based with people who have been experiencing chronic pain. So up in Canada here, athletic therapists are very similar to physiotherapists. We are trained in all things muscle, bone, joint, nerve, and more advanced exercise prescription. So it's a really great fit in between the strength training world and the medical world to really help bridge that gap and get people going again, because we can get really, really deep and specific into what's going on with people's pain. Is there really something structural that we need to be concerned about? Or is this more of like that achy stiffness, tightness, soreness that is something that can be worked through or worked around? And that's the coolest part of my job, is I get to literally spend all day helping clients get started into these training programs and get moving again.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah, how long have you been doing that?
I'm coming up on 10 years in the industry altogether, and it's been 6 or 7 where it's been more focused into the chronic pain side of things. I've been in the sports world, the athletics world, working at international games and sporting events with teams and traveling, and I really settled into the chronic pain world about 6 or 7 years ago, because it's so rewarding to be able to help people in that capacity. And I've been in that situation where there's fear and nervousness related to exercise, injuries, things hurting, and being so uncertain of what to do. And what made the biggest difference for me was having this team of people, from my therapist, the chiropractor, the strength coach, the nutritionist, everybody all working together to help get me to that next phase. And I was like, that's what I want to do for other people.
It's like, it's so funny to me that you say working in chronic pain is so rewarding, because in traditional healthcare, when I think of working with chronic pain, I'm like, oh, it's like narcotics and
it's very, very common. I mean, our medical system keeps people in chronic pain if you follow the more traditional route. But when you can really get into that holistic side of things and start to look at stress management, look at nutrition, look at how people move and recover as well, then chronic pain is not as complex as it's made out to be.
Yeah, Sean and I were talking about today, like even in the CrossFit gym, I hear like, I can't do CrossFit because I have back issues or I have knee issues. And I'm like, well, you probably have back issues because you don't have a strong core, or no one taught you to move right, or you have extra weight on your body. And coming into the CrossFit gym can probably help you with those things.
Absolutely. Like, there's no such thing as a bad exercise or a bad movement. It's just something you're maybe not ready for yet.
Right.
Yeah. But there's tons of ways to modify and work around things. And more often than not, especially with chronic pain, any sort of activity is going to be helpful. So if you can even do half a workout, and maybe you don't start jumping, you know, full thing into an hour long high intensity workout, but easing into it is totally doable.
Right. That's what we were talking about today too. The same exact thing. Yeah. For another episode that we're having. But my question is, so if someone comes to you and they're having, say, chronic knee pain, how do you bridge that gap in their mind to help them understand that it's not technically, you know, necessarily like an injury, but it's just pain that they have to kind of work through and learn how to make it better in other ways or modify movements? How do you kind of help them get to that mindset, I guess?
Yeah, mindset is the biggest part with it more than anything else. And that's what comes through from doing a really clear physical exam. So we go through their whole history of what's gone on, and just figuring out the timeline is the easiest starting point, because if something has been bothering you for months and months and there was no particular trauma necessarily, then we can, you know, make sure all the ligaments are stable, make sure the muscles are intact. And that's super easy to do by in a 10-minute exam, basically. And then you can go down that path of movement and just look through joints above and below, look through the rest of their body and see, is there something else that's inefficient that's contributing to this? Because most of the time with knee pain that's been ongoing, that gradual onset and no specific trauma, your hips are probably tight, your ankles might be weak, you know, core is not necessarily as strong as it could be or should be. So then the force is just going to go somewhere else instead of actually doing what it's supposed to do. And that's why the knee hurts. So you go through the exam, we can reassure people that everything is stable, strong, intact, and then it's a tolerance thing at that point, right? And we can think about it from the perspective of injury or pain, and injury in particular comes from when the load we put on an area exceeds the capacity of what it's able to handle. Like it really can be that simple. So then we start talking about capacity. How do you increase capacity? You strength train.
Right.
You get more flexible, you do stretching, you do yoga, you get in the gym, you start maybe jogging or Stairmaster before you get into running. Either way, it's all going to be gradual exposure at that point. So once you just rule out the bad stuff and those red flags, then it just comes literally back down to, okay, what's the safest entry point to start to load this issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think when people feel pain, they think of like, oh, I can't do anything because I'm going to injure this more. When it's not like... it's not an injury. Like you said, like if you didn't have trauma to that area, it's and it comes on gradually, it's not an injury. It's a weakness in another area.
Exactly. Yeah. And like pain is, it's a very emotional, psychological experience. And it's so common to have pain in the absence of injury. It's the same thing with headaches, right? Like we can have excruciating pain in our heads. Doesn't mean there's some, like you broke your brain or your skull or something. Right. It just happens.
Yeah.
And that analogy often works with people. It's like, oh, okay, it's not that hurt is equaling harm. It hurts and we have to respect that. But that doesn't mean that it's imparting more tissue damage or structural damage or anything like that.
Right, yeah.
But people don't like to hurt. So how do we get them to be uncomfortable in that? Or I mean, that's the hardest thing is they're like, even if you explain this to them, but then they go start to do something – it hurts, so I'm not going to do it.
That's what I was going to say. The very thing that will help them is probably is typically the things that they think are going to hurt them, right? So you have to try to,
Yeah, it's about finding that safe entry point where it feels good and they see success very quickly. And maybe if, you know, like the knee pain hurts at the bottom of a squat a quarter range, half range, and you can often load that up really, really well, and they're not hitting that painful range, and then you can gradually get lower, lower, lower. If it's a deadlift that's bothering your back, maybe that's starting then with glute bridges and then hip thrusters and working your way up in through all those hip hinge patterns that way. So it is about scaling it back and just finding the hardest thing that that person can do well that hits the target tissue, and just continuously checking in and helping people recognize that there are different sensations in their body, because especially when people start working out, people confuse delayed onset muscle soreness with pain or an intense stretch sensation with pain. And then that just means we have to come back to load management.
But I think I mean, you're in like what you said about not being in tune with the pain or being confused as to what signal it is. Like, as women, I think we're completely out of tune with our body with everything, not just pain, like not even just like exercising. What is this? Is it delayed onset muscle soreness? Is it whatever? Yeah. But even with like hunger, is this hunger or am I stressed out or am I tired or
bored?
Bored, right? And just like with exercise, a lot of women approach it this all or nothing. Like I have to be running 5 miles or I have to be a couch potato, and they do that with nutrition too, right? It's like I have to eat broccoli and chicken for every single meal or I'm eating McDonald's,
right? Yeah, that pendulum just swings so far instead of settling in that sweet spot in the middle. And that's so, so common with exercise, I see too. It's like, like we said earlier, I have to go through this full hour-long high-intensity workout when maybe you just need a 20-minute strength circuit to start with.
Right.
But we're led to believe so many things.
Right. So how do you, like, I find a lot, there's also a miscommunication with, or maybe clients have been misinformed, or patients, or like my doctor told me that I can't squat, or my doctor told me that I can't do CrossFit. And it's just feeding into the story that they're telling themselves, like, I can't work out because it hurts. I can't work out because my doctor told me I do. I can't work out because I don't have time. How do you work with people on that?
It's a challenging situation when it comes from the docs and the quote unquote higher ups like that, right? Yeah. And I know part of it is they have to almost be overcautious because they're only spending a few minutes with people. They see you once every couple months. And at the end of the day, too, though, they're not necessarily experts in the muscle bone joint stuff. Right. And a lot of clients don't understand that. And so when they come see me and they're like, look, my doctor told me never to squat again. I'm like, did they tell you to never sit up and down out of a chair then? Because that's a squat. And then that starts to flip the switch in the client's
mind. Or go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And they're like, oh, okay, so I can squat sometimes. Mm-hmm. And starting to paint that picture for them. And a big part of what I do is, go again, that physical exam and go through it. And I casually ask them, you know, did your doc go through all of these movements with you? Did they test your range of motion? Did they test your strength? And then it comes out like, no, they just took an x-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or, you know, they just told me, like, you shouldn't run because you're 50 years old. And, like, why do you need – like, I had a lady come see me very recently who is incredibly strong, kicks my ass in every single workout we do together, at least twice my age, and she wants to back squat. And her doc straight up told her, like, why do you want to do that? You're too old for that. I was like, why? She's capable of doing it. So why not do that then? Why are you shutting it down because of age? And it's so frustrating. But as soon as you show them, again, that success, like, okay, like, we can get your mobility into that position. You can start to shoulder press cleanly. You can start to do a bar press. And then they're like, oh, okay, I can get it. I can get it. I can get it. Then they're willing to do a little bit more and loosen the reins a little bit. But it definitely comes down to trust as well. Like, I can't come in hot being like, yo, your doctor's stupid, or that other physio you saw doesn't make sense. Like, that's not going to fly.
Right.
But if you can show them what they are capable of doing and that it's safe and that there's no flare-ups or risk of injury, then you can start to pull them out of that restriction.
Yeah. So this is, like, great on talking to people about how to get started with exercise or whatever, but chronic pain is so much different. How do you approach those? Are you doing, like, breath work, like teaching them to breathe through stuff and doing stuff like that? Because I know and in Lifted, we talk a lot about breath work and the stories that we're telling ourselves and stuff like that. I can imagine with chronic pain, that is a lot of it.
Absolutely. With chronic pain, most of the time, the pain is being driven by these psychological or social factors or fear or other things. Because, like I mentioned earlier, like, the tissue's healed, right? Like, we talk about chronic pain being something that's there for 3 months or more. After an injury, within 3 months, majority, if not all, of the tissues are going to be healed, right? Like, a broken bone heals in a month or 6 weeks. Right. A significant grade 3 sprain or strain is still going to heal in 10 to 12 weeks from that physiological cellular level. So we can be confident that the structure is okay and it's okay to start exercising. The fact that they still have pain, absolutely valid, absolutely still accurate. It's being driven more by stress, fear, anxiety, nervousness, and also deconditioning a lot of the time, right? Because after injury, when people withdraw from activity because of injury, because of fear, any of those reasons, we start to do less. The less you do, the stiffer you get. The stiffer you get, the worse the tissue quality gets, right? And it's like that Play-Doh that sits out on the counter for too long. It gets hard and not very pliable. And you have to really warm it up, work into it, and then it starts to have that elasticity again. And our muscles and ligaments are the same way. So if you haven't put your body into these positions in a very long time, or potentially ever, the first time you do it, there's going to be discomfort. and that's not harmful is just starting to work into it. And that's just where the gradual nature of it comes in, right? And so taking it slow, step by step, and absolutely breathing through it. Because anytime we can get parasympathetic, calm things down, we're going to experience a lot less pain. And everybody knows that from just when you like stub your toe on a couch really hard, right? It's like you pause, you got to breathe through it, and then we're okay. Like your breath can center and ground you into that. And that's the same in exercise. So we use all sorts of strategies like that. And that's why I think yoga is so powerful in particular, because it's so connected to your breath. And if we can take those principles into strength training, it's game changing for people. Like counting breaths instead of seconds in a plank. Or just making sure you're being really mindful of like where you're doing your exhale on your lift. Reminding
People do not know how to breathe during their
lift. Right? It's like, let's just hold in and like suck everything in and tense everything up. Like, no wonder your back hurts because you're over bracing. Like
stiff.
I've never had a back injury. And if I suck in and brace super hard, it's going to hurt like crazy when I go deadlift.
Yeah.
So getting into that rest digest side of it, it works from like the general nervous system level, I think, just to calm things down and give people that freedom of movement because they're like more flexible and mobile. And it also can get really nerdy scientific too with it. When you're in that fight or flight, like high stress environment, and you got more cortisol and all those stress hormones like ramping around your body, there's a direct correlation from the amount of cortisol you have and how sensitive your nerve fibers are, right? So you can have peripheral nerve pain, like not coming from spinal cord or anything like that, but the peripheral nerves, if you just have high amounts of cortisol in your body without any injury, because cortisol just makes everything so much more sensitive. If you're a little sore going into it, and now we're super high intensity, you're ramping everything up, stressed, pushing it hard, you're obviously going to feel more discomfort. So if we can come back to that breath and reset it, that gives people so much more success.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it like that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So let's say I go to the doctor because I'm having pain. Let's just stick with the knee pain because, you know. And then they tell me I can't squat, whatever. So how do people get to you? Is it they don't like that answer and they don't believe that that's truly the correct answer for them? And so then they seek out you, for instance? Is that how it works typically?
Yeah. That most of the time it would be like that. They're not satisfied with that. They want to be able to continue work, life, play, sport, whatever it is. So we're direct access and they can come do that. The other situation is through their strength coaches or personal trainers or whoever too. I'm not as familiar in the States, but in Canada, the scope of practice of strength coaches and personal trainers is they cannot really assess or, you know, put their hands on somebody to go through range of motion to test things like that. And I feel like it's comparable.
It's the same.
Yeah. So oftentimes their strength coaches are sending them to me to get the all clear on things. Like, can you just rule the stuff in and out, confirm what they were told that the doctor said, and then we can work together to build their strength program. So they'll come and see me. We realize, okay, it's nothing crazy with your knee. It's likely just that underprepared aspect of things, maybe some inflammation because you're starting to do more than what you were ready for. And then we can build a training program from there where typically they'll come see me and we do more of the gradual exposure stuff together because people prefer often to have that type of support going through it as opposed to being thrown out on their own. And then really maximizing what the rest of their body is doing in the gym with their coach. You know, like, okay, it's your knee. We can still deadlift. We can still do all sorts of other exercises for core. We can maybe do lateral lunges instead of forward lunges if that's bugging you, and then they can just build their program out like that.
But people think they get an injury, it's like, oh, can't go to the gym anymore. I know my husband's like, if your shoulder hurts, like, we're just gonna act like, and we're gonna tie it behind your back and use the other arm.
Wear a weight vest or something.
So use your legs,
lower body.
Like, you don't have to just stop going.
But, and people often get just caught in that story and they start to identify, and I've been there. Like, I used to identify myself as an injured dancer because I had hip surgery from a dancer. It's like, oh no, I'm injured. And it's like, no, I'm experiencing a limitation in one area of my body. As opposed to being so in it. And if we can help people work through that side of things and realize what they are still capable of, that's the key. And I think it's just a lot of fear for people most of the time. So if we can just get them in the gym that first time and show them. And maybe it means like, hey, let's just come in and talk and let's just see what like, we're not going to come in for a workout necessarily, but come in, meet up, let's chat, let's see where things are at, let's see what's going on. And then once there's that connection, then they're often willing to try a little bit more. And then you show them that success, like, look, we just did this and it didn't cause a flare up, it didn't spike anything. Then we can start to add a little bit more, a little bit more.
Right. I think it's like that with nutrition or our program with women too. It's like, they're really scared to take the plunge because they're like, oh, you're going to have me doing all this crazy stuff. And it's like, no, just like, hold on a second, take a step in. We're going to start out slowly. We're not going to completely change your whole life here until you can never have a cookie again. Like,
But I think it's that fear of the unknown, right? Yeah, like people just, they don't know. And we talk about that too in fitness, nutrition, and healthy lifestyles. Sometimes people are just misinformed. They don't know how to read their body, or they just don't have the proper information to get themselves where they want to be. They just don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's helpful. So how long would you say if someone comes to you, you know, with the knee pain, how long does it typically take for you to see that breakthrough? If it's not truly an injury, it's just like a movement limitation or something like that. How long, like, is the typical average until you see that kind of light bulb? Like, oh, okay, I can do this. I'm doing this.
Yeah. My goal is to ideally get some sort of light bulb moment in that first session, if it's something very, very small, because most of the time you can make a change through even something as simple as breath work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you measure someone's ability to touch their toes and, you know, their back hurts when their fingertips reach their knees. We can go do some breathing. We can go do some, you know, cat cows or some sort of other stretch like that, maybe a few glute bridges. And then we'll go back and retest. And 98% of the time, they're going to be able to reach a little bit further. Not that we changed something magically in their back. We just calmed their nervous system a little bit. We showed them in a non-threatening way that their spine can flex because they did it in the cat-cow. And then their body lets them go that little bit further. And then they're like, oh, okay, I can see that. Mm-hmm. So as soon as they see one thing, then we can often get things going. And that's enough to get them to come back in and do it again and do it again. And I'd say on average, 3 or 4 sessions is when we're getting like the big breakthroughs on things.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But my goal for sure is something within that first session, even if it's just temporary relief for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. The fact that we show people that they can modify their own pain experience. And maybe that's with breath work, maybe that's with yoga, maybe it's with some sound healing, maybe it's with exercise, maybe it is using a TENS machine, maybe it is using some, you know, massage techniques or joint mobilizations. At the end of the day, all of those techniques have the same effect of you're calming the nervous system, you're giving people a little bit more range of motion through that. So however we get there that they feel the safest, we'll do in that session to get some sort of quick win, for lack of a better word.
Well, yeah, and the trust built too, probably, like you said before. Yeah, in that first session, that's probably super crucial to build
for
that trust.
Yeah, and I think it goes for most healthcare fitness industries that the better therapeutic relationship, the better outcome you're going to get. Like, it's well researched in most industries with that. So whatever it takes to get that trust, there's always going to be an entry point. It just sometimes takes a little bit longer to find it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I know you do stuff with people online too. So you can't, like, how does that work?
I love it so much better than in person for sometimes because then it really shows people how much power they have over their own situation.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. Because then they're not relying on me, because it's absolutely great for them to come in and me to put my hands on them and do some sort of treatment or intervention. Sometimes though, that can create this relationship of them latching onto it and thinking, oh, Megan fixed me, or I need Megan's magic hands to like realign things before break up scar tissue. Yeah. And it's a fine line. Like, yes, we can absolutely provide support, and the framing of it is what's key in those situations. So in online, you don't even have the opportunity for that. So it often is a lot more powerful for the client to go through these strategies and techniques and then feel or see the difference, even if it's, you know, 5 degrees more of knee range of motion, that an 8 to a 5 on the pain scale or something. So it looks very, very similar in terms of the actual structure of the of the session. We'll still go through their story, hear what's going on, watch them do some range of motion, have to get a little bit more creative with some strength testing, right? To just kind of manipulate them against gravity instead of me being able to push on something. Mm-hmm. And then again, we can still start playing around with different exercises to and breath work and whatever it is to find that down regulatory activity, retest something and see what changes. And then reinforcing too, like those changes are not magic and it's not going to last forever. It's a window of opportunity though, when we create that down regulatory state for them to then go into the gym, them to go for a walk, maybe, or hop on the bike, do some zone two steady state or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I think people have a huge misconception on, I mean, I hear it a lot, like I want to work with someone in person and I get it. It's great. But a lot of times the resources and the people that you have available to you might not be the best fit for you. And now it's 2023 and there is a world of experts that can help you that aren't physically there with you. And I always tell people that are hesitant about working with us online or anyone online, I'm like, I talk to my online distance clients more than I talk to any of my patients, right? Like I'm on Zoom with them, undivided attention. It's not any, you're not getting any less care by working with someone online than you are in person. And that's another huge like misconception that people have, or a story that they're telling themselves, or you don't have to like find a sometimes, it's beneficial to find a trainer in person, but there are a ton of trainers online that can Zoom with you and walk you through everything without you being next to them.
Exactly. And they still often have that community aspect too, which is important. So I agree. And up here, the pandemic was a really good turning point for some people to realize that, because we were forced to go online off and on for some extended periods of time. And so people are like, well, I don't know when this is going to come back in person, so I'm willing to try it. And then once they did, they're like, oh, I get it. This works.
Yeah. We always say that with Lindsay, specifically in like the women's health practice, you know, in her office, it's, you know, she comes in, it's not a long appointment, right? When you go to your OBGYN or it's not a long appointment, but people think that like they're going to get more care in person, like we just said, but sometimes like your insurance wouldn't even cover the amount of time that you're going to get with Lindsay by joining our program. Like they're not even going to pay for it. Like she's not just going to come in, you know, take a little peeksy under there and like leave. Like it's a lot more in depth, but again, it's just a misconception.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I know a lot of physiological changes that happen with women as they're aging, and that's a lot of our population is you're losing estrogen, so you're losing muscle mass, but that estrogen also really is important in your connective tissue, and you're losing flexibility and you're losing speed and power because your hormones are declining. And if you're not doing something to keep those up, you are going to not feel that great. You are going to have aches and pains because you're not flexible and you're not keeping your joints. You're just, your bone density is declining. And so I think from your standpoint, it would be really beneficial for them to hear, like, why is it so important that they keep moving and keep doing these things? Because it's really easy to hit older age and be like, well, I don't need to work out anymore. But it's more important.
I was going to say, it's the opposite from everything I've seen and witnessed in my personal life with family members and absolutely in my business too. It's about maintaining that ability to stay independent, to be able to get up and down off the floor with kids or grandkids or yard work, housework, things like that. Like if you don't do something for an extended period of time, like it's literally true. Like if you don't use it, you lose it. So if you start to avoid reaching overhead because one time it hurt my shoulder and you never reach overhead again, like what happens when you slip and you have to reach to grab for something? Your body has no idea how to deal with the fact that your arm is above shoulder height. If you've never exercised in a way where it's a lateral movement, right? Because we're only going forwards and backwards. We forget about lateral and rotation stuff. When you're reaching to pick up something out of the grocery cart, your body's going to potentially get hurt because you've never done it. Or this is why people get hurt when they bend over to pick up a sock off the floor. Like, how many times do we hear that? Right? Like half the time, it's not the deadlift in the gym that hurt people. It's something random at home because they literally were not prepared for it. And you can't necessarily prevent injuries because accidents are going to happen, right? Like you're going to slip and your leg's going to slide out from under you, or you know, the seatbelt gets caught when you're pulling it and you jerk your shoulder. Like these things happen. So if you've prepared your body to withstand some extra force and load, then you'll be able to do more and continue to move freely and actually live the life that you want, as opposed to your bubble shrinking more and more and more because you're doing less.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And like everyone's so scared of, you know, squatting with their knees going past their toes because somebody told them their knee's going to explode one day. But like, you want to go up and down stairs in your house, you got to train these things.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And a lot of older people don't like to give up their independence. Right. That's something that's really like weighs them down. I know, especially like my grandpa was really independent truck driver. And then as he got older and lost that, they kind of, I feel like they kind of sink into a slump. And so, like we said, if you're able to keep up those things, then that's one less thing that you have to worry about is, you know, losing your independence and having to have someone take care of you all the time. So,
exactly. Yeah. It's way easier to maintain than it is to try to regain something or to get it back.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Right. But, so if we can.
Yeah.
And like twice a week is good for most people for strength training. Like it doesn't have to be these 7 day workout plans and anything like that. Like a couple days of resistance training, a few days of cardio, some mobility and flexibility stuff, like you're golden. You can do a lot in that time frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly when we talked about like, okay, what's the perfect fitness plan? Like you're going to do 2 to 3 days of strength training. You're going to do some sessions of zone 2 cardio and maybe sprinkle in some high intensity zone 5, like all out max effort stuff every once in a while. But like, obviously don't start in that zone 5 all out.
Yes.
Stuff you've not worked out in a while.
Yeah, disclaimer there.
Yeah, like, yeah, definitely don't do that. But I mean, it's like, it's exactly what you said. And when you're starting out, it's just like, go on a walk, squat to the bench, get up and squat to your toilet. Like seriously, just stand up and down on your toilet. Like that's a squat. That's a, like, that's a strength training movement.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah. But even stretching for mobility, like you said, stretching, yoga, those are also super crucial. And I think a lot of people don't stretch or don't take the time to do those things. But even I notice myself as getting older, like you are a little bit stiffer. Like I was saying when we did, I did a workout when we were in Cancun with one of our coaches, Lakin, and it was, she had me doing curtsy, you know, lunges.
Yes.
And I was like, dang, my hips are a little tight. And then I felt like a baby giraffe for the next like 2 days. And I'm like, I haven't been working that, but it's so true. You know,
you got to do that. Your body just like disconnects and your brain's like, oh yeah, I need to be able to do that. And
yeah,
I think like dang. I love those routines for people, whether it's like through a yoga practice or even just like literal joint circles, like take every single joint through a full circle every single day. Like do your neck circles, do some shoulder circles, even just some wrist stuff, hips, knees, and work your way down, and doing like 5 or 6 reps a day at the minimum of just that, like, will maintain that joint's mobility. And because that's a lot of things that we don't typically do throughout the day. You can get you can absolutely get through a day without moving your hip out to the side, without moving your shoulder overhead or behind you.
So
if we can intentionally just find these moments where it's 5 or 10 minutes, play a couple of your favorite songs or something like that, and just take every joint through its full range of motion every single day, your joints are going to be healthier, your muscles will stay more flexible, your brain won't forget that it has that ability to do those things. So it just gives you that little bit of an advantage.
Yeah. But it feels good too. I mean, like if you don't actually have an injury, I was just thinking, you know, if you get a massage and they like take it and they like roll your wrist, like it feels good, but you don't, you're right. You don't ever really do that. But yeah.
And if that's the only thing you do, you're going to maintain range of motion for sure.
Oh, for sure.
That's good for them to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So one question we always ask all of our guests is like, we've, you know, our population, what's the best piece of advice or what would you want women that are listening to this to know?
That it's okay if you don't have a full plan figured out right now. If you are experiencing soreness, stiffness, pain, whatever it is, there's a lot more that you're going to be able to do than what you've likely been led to believe or have seen online or whatever it is. So taking that first step, even if you don't know what the full training program is, have the conversation with the trainers, the nutritionists, the functional medicine, athletic therapists, whoever it is, and just see what opportunities are out there for you.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be more than you think.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, this was so awesome. I feel like I need to ask her my question, though.
You do. I was
just because. Okay, this is from Mike. He told me to ask, you know, all of our coaches this question, but I kind of just feel like I want to keep it going. So, Megan, if you could be one Disney princess, which Disney princess would you be?
Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
I can see that.
Yeah. And nobody thinks I'm crazy. I still love this, that nobody's like, oh, that's kind of weird. Everyone just answers it. They really think about it and answer it. That's so great.
Yeah, like I've got that on lock. Yeah, I love Belle. That was always my favorite movie growing up. And the idea of just living in this place with all these books and how I can just continue to learn all day, every day is my dream.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's perfect.
She's gorgeous and has a pretty dress.
True.
So if people want to talk to you, get more information from you, even find out about working with you, whatever, how would they go about doing that?
Instagram's the easiest way to connect with me, which is @MeganPomeransky. And my website is also www.meganpomeransky.com, which has all the info for athletic therapy, strength training, yoga, all of the fun things to help people get moving freely again.
That's awesome. And we really appreciate you coming on today. This was so great and super informational. And we'll have your links and your Instagram handle. We'll drop that below so that you girls can all find Megan. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a review and a 5-star rating, that helps us out a ton. And we will catch you next week. See ya.
Bye, girls.
Bye.